This is Rabbi Moshe Heinemann, who tells his recollections of the Rosh Yeshiva Zal. When did you come to the yeshiva and where did you come from?
I came from Tel Abbas in 1954.
Yeah. Okay, and also, how did you come into the yeshiva? What was the introduction? What brought you here?
What brought me there? Yeah. I mean, there weren't that many yeshivas in those days. Basically, it was a choice of Beis Medrash Aliyah or Likud.
And who did you know here that you...
Actually, I got in through the help of some of the Yemalite who lived in Washington Heights at that time. Especially Rabbi Falk Klugman and Julius Jacobs. Anyway, I just remembered a maestro which I want to tell you about.
Okay.
There was a Bacha. His name at that time was a Bacha. His name was Yaakov Spiegel.
Yeah.
He now is the Rav of the Romanische Shul in the Lower East Side.
Mm-hmm.
He's a cousin of the Yaakov Spiegel, who's the Edom of Rabik. So he, his foot, the ankle got swollen.
Uh-huh.
So he went to a doctor in town. It was on an Erev Shabbos. He's a comes from a Hasidic mishpacha, a Rabbish mishpacha.
Mm-hmm.
Ostrov Kashin Mareba. His father was Ostrov Kashin Mareba. So it was a Friday, his foot got swollen and it hurt him, and he went to the doctor. The doctor's name was Dr. Zinkin.
Uh-huh.
And I think he lived on 2nd Street.
Yeah.
And this Dr. Zinkin looked at the foot, and he was like an illui, this Dr. Zinkin.
Mm-hmm.
He did everything. He was an obstetrician and a gynecologist and a heart specialist and a lung specialist and a general practitioner, everything. But he was like, he was a little bit, let's say, eccentric.
Uh-huh.
And half the time he was the obstetrician, he didn't show up.
Uh-huh.
Half the time he didn't show up. The nurses used to deliver the babies. And I remember I had the Asian flu. The first time the Asian flu came to the United States.
Uh-huh.
And so the whole yeshiva got it, including the Rosh Yeshiva. But it was between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur that the whole yeshiva got it. But I was one of the first that got it.
Mm-hmm.
So he comes into the room, and I'm lying in bed. And they didn't know at that time what you're supposed to do with this Asian flu. So he gives me a penicillin shot, and then he says, what's the matter? You know? he was like a little bit strange. Anyway, he sees Yaakov Spiegel's foot. He looks at it. He says, "This is very serious, and we have to amputate the foot right away." Because if we don't amputate right away, he can spread to the rest of the body, and then he'll be dead. So he was very shocked. And normally, Chassid doesn't do anything without asking his rabbi first.
Yeah.
It was Erev Shabbos, and it was not Bechdesh Yasser to go there and come back, or to go there Bechlau, because in those days it took a long time to go to Lakewood. To now it's 1.5 hours. In those days it was much longer. There was that whole Route 9 was not built up.
Uh-huh.
It was like a two-lane highway.
Uh-huh.
One lane each way. So he went to Myra Shashiva, the Roshima, you know, and if he's not a Hasidic rabbi, he'll do for a Hasidic rabbi. I guess that's what he figured. Now he's living now, you can ask him about this myself.
Okay, I believe you.
Yeah, okay. So
I spoke to him already.
Oh, you spoke to him about this myself?
But I just spoke about it because he didn't want to really give me an interview.
I see, okay. Anyway, so he went to the Roshima, and the Roshima said, "Let me see the foot." She showed the foot. He said, "Let me see the other foot."
Yeah.
He looked at the foot. He said, "It doesn't look so bad to me. I'll tell you what, go to Dr. Tobin." Now, Dr. Tobin was that doctor I told you about last
year.
Yeah,
time. Right.
Held him. He was already in his 80s, and he held a lot from him because he was an ultra yid. So, I mean, he was an ultra mensch, so he had a lot of experience. So he went to Dr. Tobin. And Dr. Tobin said, "It's gone, forget about it, it'll go away by itself, don't do anything."
Wow.
So he didn't do it. So then, about a week later, he meets Dr. Zinkin in the street. And he says, Dr. Zinkin says to him, "You're still alive?" like that he doesn't have a right to be alive. Once he passed him, that he's supposed to be dead if he doesn't have that. So he said, the Rav Arshom takes care of me. Uh-huh. That's what he answered. So, anyway, getting back again to the Seder of the Yeshiva.
Yeah.
The Rosh Yeshiva said there's a Kabbalah from Chaim Volozhiner to learn 4 hours Dorim.
Each Seder should be 4 hours.
Right. So even though the cook... So the second Seder was over at 8 o'clock, and then they had a half-hour Musa, and then they first had Marav, so till they got to Yitzhak was 9 o'clock. 5 to 10 to 9, whatever, and the cook wanted to go to sleep, or wants to... The cook was... Her name was Mrs. Berman.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't want to stay up that late, or she wanted to go away for the night, or to go out for the night, so she didn't... So she asked if we could make it the supper earlier. So the Rashiva said, there's a Kabbalah from Chaim Volozhiner, you have to have a 4 hour Seder. It started at 4 o'clock, from 4 to 8. And Chaim Volozhiner says that if you learn 4 hours, you steig more in the last hour than you steig in all of... than you steig in the first three. Because the part of your mind is all... Their anger's up from learning, and now you're putting it all together in that last hour, so... So he was very macro on that. The morning Seder was a 4 hour Seder, and the afternoon Seder was a 4 hour Seder because of that.
Huh.
Now, as far as what to learn,
yeah.
He had the shiurim worked out on 8 Masechtas. Those are the 3 bavas. That Bava Kambosi and Bava Basra. He had on. The Yavamas, on Ksubas, Gittin, and Kedushin, and also on the Dharam and Shuas. So that's what we learned, Dharam with Shuas together, and the 3 Bavas. And each one we learned for half a year. That was one went from Pesach to Sukkot, then one from Sukkot to Pesach.
Uh-huh.
And he said, sure. So those are the only Masechtas, those were the official Masechtas that the Yeshiva was learning.
Did he want you to finish the Masechtas?
He was not makbid. He never said anything necessary about finishing the Masechtas. But he was very upset at the slow pace that the Yeshiva was learning. Learned about two blood a week. He was very upset about that. And later went down to 1.5 blood. He said there's no doubt ever in this chanuch on social learning. He said he doesn't understand what's taking so long. He says you learn up tomorrow Rashi Tosfos, you look at the Rosh and the Rif and the Ran, and then you look in the Rashma and the Ritva and the Ramban and the other Rishonim, and then you take a look at some of the Achronim. You take a look at the studies in the Sivas and the Chemnitz Shleima and Rav Kivega and this and that, and you rattle off a whole bunch of that. And Nachum gave him a viper.
What do you mean by taking a look at?
He said, you look at them, you look to see what they have to say on the Indian, and then you go viper. Like, I mean, if we would do everything that he said we have to do, we would be on Dove Bays for the rest of this month, you know, but he didn't have too much, he didn't have too much compassion for the way we learned, and not only that, but he used to, the shiurim that he said were on the side of the Masechta, and he very often said further than we were holding in order to get us to learn faster. He was very upset with it, and he said many times, he said in his shmuzin, that there's no halach how we're learning, much too slow. Even though that we were twice as fast as Beis Nachshelian, they said like in the yeshiva, they used to say the following joke, that when the Bachum come to lunch in Lakewood, they asked them, what daf are you holding?
Uh-huh.
In Beis Medrash Elyon, they said, which sugi are you holding?
Uh-huh.
And in the Mir, at the Beis HaTalmud, they said, which line are you holding?
Uh-huh.
That was the joke they used to say.
Uh-huh.
Which was, there was a lot of truth to that.
Also, if one, he wanted everybody to learn all those Masechtas, right?
Yeah, because that was the shurim on those Masechtas.
Okay. And what about learning other Masechtas? Do you have any opinion about that?
It was not in the Seder HaYeshiva. And I have to tell you that he himself, Ben Azmanim, used to chazer the other Masechtas. I once watched him allowing himself as Erevin.
Mm-hmm.
So he was sitting up in the front in the base of Irish, and I was sitting in the back, and I was facing him.
Mm-hmm.
But so I timed him, how often did he turn the page? How long it took him to learn a daf himself as Erevin. Every 5-6 minutes he turned the page. You know, he chazed over the Gemarash and tells every 5-6 minutes of a daf. That's how long it took him. And sometimes he looked up something, he turned to the Rif, to the Rosh. On average, it was within 5-6 minutes, took him a daf, with looking up whatever you want to look up.
I guess he expected everybody to do what he did.
Yeah. that's how he learned.
Okay. Now, what about other subjects the White Shulchan Aruch, did he recommend anything about that? Or?
He did not. It was not in the Seder Yeshiva to learn Shulchan Aruch. If you wanted to, there was a halacha Seder after the davening, half hour.
Yeah.
To learn halacha, that's Mishabura or Chai Adam or whatever you wanted to learn. That was up to you. Was set aside special for that, and but he didn't push it. It was a Seder in Yeshiva, a half hour after the davening.
And let's say Chumash and other subjects, he never mentioned anything.
The yeshiva as a whole didn't get involved with that. There were Bachram who learned Chumash, learned Nach, like Ben Azdarim, or they learned on Shabbos or whatever. Each one did it like his own. There was no...
He never expressed an opinion about these things.
I don't remember that he ever said... He was never Mazarez La'olam to learn Chumash or Nach or Halacha, as far as I know. Now, there were some people who learned for Smicha in the Yeshiva. But Derek Klal, he used to send them through Moshe Feinstein to get a HaTorah. He didn't do it himself, even though that when during the war that they needed a smicha in order to get out of the draft, he gave the whole yeshiva smicha himself.
Uh-huh.
And Yechidim, he gave smicha, but not smicha for Yerden. That was, the Tzuras HaShas in order to get smicha from him.
What's this? Tzuras HaShas?
Tzuras HaShas, yeah. I mean, like you had to have be bekant with all the sugars in order to get smicha from him.
Okay. Okay, what else?
Now you know that before he said the shir, he said a shir on Monday morning at 12 o'clock, and he said the other shir on Shabbos, and the sun was at 3 o'clock during Shabbos, and then the winter was 8 o'clock at night.
Mm-hmm.
Now, before he said the shir, any shir, he used to say it over to 3 bachrim before he said the shir berabim.
Now, do you remember who they were?
They were like Meir Hershkowitz was one of them, Rabbi Yosef Tandler was one, Rabbi Yaakov Schiff was one, Rabbi Moshe Hirsch was one. Like it depended, on the Tekufa of...
Which Moshe Hirsch are you talking about?
The ones who are Shiva and Slobodka.
Okay.
And I think Rabbi Meir Stern was sometimes there. It depends, he used the most chashuva bachrim, who into his shurim, that's the ones who he said he took 3 of them, and he used to say the shift then. So if they have any aras, any kashas, that they should be able to tell him, and so they should anticipate, if there's a problem, or he himself should be more mogul of the shina, so he said over. Now, it was once that he, instead of saying the shir in the base medrash, he said the shir in a side room. It was about half the size of the base medrash, and people really had to cram in. But he would not say it in the, he wouldn't say it in the base medrash because this was what we heard. I didn't hear, but he said, they said that this was a new shir. He really said, the same shirim that he said in Kletzk. And he kept on saying on these 8 mesechtas, every 4 years he repeated the shurim.
Was mechadish anything in his shurim?
No, no, he added a raya or a kasha or whatever. But the shurim were the same. That's what they tell me.
Uh-huh.
And because I was only there for 8 years during his lifetime. So he'd been saying already for many years before. He was speaking Rashi, I think, when he was 21 years old already. But that was in Kletsk. That was before my time.
But it just reminded me, I just forgot something. Which Rishonim did he tell you to learn?
All the Rishonim.
All
the regular Rishonim. You know, the Rashi, the Gemara Rashi Tosfos, the Rashi there from the Ran, the Rashi, the Ritva, and the Ramban, and whatever else.
What about the Rambam?
Pun?
The Rambam.
The Rambam, yeah, the Rambam. Look, the Nice Kelim, the Cookman, and then look in Achrayim. Yeah, and he rattled off a whole bunch of Achrayim. The Nachum gave a light. Anyway,
very
getting back again to this shiur, he didn't say the Beis Medrash because this was a new shiur, a completely new shiur that he'd never said before, and he felt that it was not roy to say it in the Beis Medrash until it's gone through the Bikaris of the Talmidim, you know, they've heard it. So even though he said it up to three people before, but he wouldn't say it in Beis Medrash. A first time shiur, he wouldn't say in Beis Medrash.
Okay.
Have you heard that Maaser before?
No, it's a brand new. The other thing is, who used to stay over the Chazara Shia?
There was also different Kufas, it was different people. For a long time, Rav Leib Taub said it, after he was married. Rav Yaakov Schiff, the one who married Biskrov's daughter, he said it for Tkufa. And there were happy someone who understood it well enough to say
yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Okay.
Also, the seder by the when he used to eat with the yeshiva, what was that like?
When they ate?
Yeah.
Okay. One second. I just thought of something I wanted to tell you about the yeshiva. Did I tell you the math about the ksavim of the yeshiva that I mentioned that last time?
The ksavim? No.
Okay. I'll tell you this math. He was very nervous about his ksavim. He had them in big ledgers. The ledger was about 18 inches long.
These are from Europe, yeah?
From Europe, yeah. And they were thick. They were maybe 2.5 inches thick. Now, the big zunter ledgers where he wrote his chidushim in. And his shurim were in there. And actually, he lost some of his shurim in Baba Basra. He lost them on it when he came from Europe. He came to America. You know, through Shanghai.
Yeah.
So he lost some, and he was nisabel on those shurim. He never got over that. So when he came to America, and he had these, whatever shurim he had, he wouldn't leave them out of his sight. I mean, they had to be locked up in his house, or if they were out of the house, he made sure that he kept his eye on it, that nothing should happen to them. So he didn't want to go to Knesset Gedolah because he was afraid there's some over here and he's not going to be there. He was worried about it. So someone gave him the Eitzah. It's thundering out here. That's the noise you hear. Someone gave him the Eitzah. I'm going to have to make a bracha when it happens again. Someone gave him the Eitzah that he should microfilm them. The microfilm came out that time. So he doesn't have to worry. So he got the whole thing microfilmed, and Taka, after that, he was not that nervous anymore about the shurim, about these chedushim that he had written down. So he would let someone else touch it. So he was once, when he used to prepare the shurim, he used to prepare in these ledgers where he had it written down. So he was preparing the shir, and then he wanted to go from the Beis Medrash building where we used to learn to the dining room building where he slept with us, and he had to go to the other building. So he takes this ledger. You know, it was heavy. It weighed maybe 10 pounds. Okay, so he took it and he gave it to one of the Bachrim to carry for him. So the Bacher, his name was Shaul Kagan. He was the Rosh Kol in Pittsburgh. Okay, at that time it was a Bacher. So he gave it to him, and they come to the door of the Beis Medrash building. So the Shaul Kagan says the Rosh Yeshiva should go first, because, you know, I'd let the Rosh Yeshiva go first through the door. So the Rosh Yeshiva said, no, you're carrying a sefer, so you have to go first. So Shaul Kagan said, how can the sefer be bigger than the machaba? Right?
Yeah.
So what did the Rosh Yeshiva do? He took the sefer from Shaul Kagan, walked through the door first, and then gave the sefer back to him, and then they continued.
I think I heard something like that.
You heard this, my son?
Not the same details.
Okay.
Yeah. But the fact that I heard it is not important as to what goes on the tape.
Okay. Now, what was the question that you asked me?
Which question we were... Okay, I lost the track. Oh, the dining at the meals. What were the seder was? Who sat where and what?
Well, during the week, everyone had his makkavua where he used to sit, and the Bachrans took turns at being waiters to go into the kitchen, you know, with one of these sheet pans, and they put on, let's say, 8 soups at one time. They used to wait for the table. There was 8 at a table, 4 on each side, 2 on each side. There were 4 sides, so one was the waiter, and they took turns being the waiter. So, like, you had to be there was a kuadig table for everyone. Now, on Shabbos, it was a different seder, and on Shabbos, they put there was a head table. The head table had about 25 people sitting on it. The Rishiva sat in the middle, and only Eltra Bachrim were allowed to sit on this table. And it was by invitation. You couldn't sit on there by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the Eltra Bachrim used to be Mechabed Bachar to sit. So if you just came to the yeshiva, it was very unlikely that you'd be able to get a seat there, even if you were already an Eltra Bachar to begin with. But usually you had to be in yeshiva a few years until you were able to bezaicha to sit on the head table. The yeshiva used to speak in learning when on Shabbos he sat with us. And that was by the evening meal, the Shabbos morning, and Shal Sudas.
Who were some of the people who were at the table when you were there, at the head table?
These people with Moshe Hirsch from Slobodka. The other Moshe Hirsch, who married Cousin Ellenberger.
Yeah.
He was there, Ryakov Shev. There was Rumer Hartstein, Rushal Kagan. Trying to remember.
Well, whatever comes to mind.
The Rav Mordechai Sasna.
Uh-huh.
You know him?
I don't know him. Park. I heard his name.
Yeah. Also Getzel Rosenblatt was there. He was the Menagen. He was very good at Menagen. The Rishiva liked his Nagunim, so eventually they asked him to sit there. But he used to speak and learning.
He wasn't related to the Chazan Rosenblatt, was he?
I don't know. Anyway, he has yeshiva at Kesser Torah. Yeshiva Kesser Torah in Queens. The Baal Tshuva. Anyway, the Meister was there.
Mm-hmm.
And to sit there, he's spoken learning the whole time, so it was
awesome. Chaim Epstein was there too, I guess.
Chaim Epstein was there for sure, yeah. And,
was he there yet?
When I came, he was married already.
Uh-huh.
Okay, anyway, so he spoke in learning, so you had to be able to help cop with him. You know, he uh-huh. went very fast, and so it wasn't. There was no need for someone who couldn't understand what was going on to be there. Now, I want to tell you, Maisa, I don't know if I mentioned you last time about the chalas.
The what?
The chalas on Shabbos?
No.
Okay, the interesting, very interesting Maisa. Now, this Maisa actually happened after the Rosh Hashiva was Nifta. A few weeks after his nifta, maybe 5 weeks after his nifta, Reb Shaul Kagan, as a bacha, used to sit on the right side of the Rosh Hashiva, and Rameh Hasi used to sit on the left side of the Rosh Hashiva, and I sat directly across from the Rosh Hashiva.
Mm-hmm.
part of the job, the person sat directly across, was that he had to give him his meals, and he had to take care of him. That was like the unofficial job. Now, about 5 weeks after he was nifted, there was a machlokes between Rav Meir Harstein and Rav Shaul Kagan whether the Rosh Yeshiva used to cut the top challah on Friday night or he cut the bottom challah on Friday night. Rav Shaul Kagan says he cut the top challah. Rav Meir Harstein said, since halacha says he's supposed to cut the bottom challah, he would cut the bottom challah, he would definitely would have noticed it. And since he would have cut the top challah, shlag halacha. And therefore, since he didn't notice anything, he's 100% sure that he cut the bottom challah on Friday night. Okay? So they both came to me and asked me to machriya between them who's right. So I said that he never put one challah on top of the other challah. He had one challah next to they were side by side. And he used to cut the challah, which was on the right side. On his right side, he used to cut that challah.
So he didn't pick them up together?
He didn't. They were one next to the other.
Mm-hmm.
So then when I told him that, then they talk about, remember, the kachavi. But you see from this how, in such a short period of time, in a few weeks, a person will forget something that he saw every week. I mean, we saw this week by week. You know, probably 100 times, you know, at least 100 times.
I asked a question about that. Something just came to my mind. Was he masamen with the knife on the challah?
I don't remember. I don't remember that. Anyway, he used to cut off the end piece, like a cut off, let's say, 1.5 inches from the end. And that piece he put on the side, and then he cut up the whole rest of the challah to give out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he cut the big piece from the little piece.
Cut the big piece from the little piece.
Right.
So he cut the cut off the end.
Right.
And then he...
And he gave out from the big piece, he cut that whole thing up.
Okay, yeah.
And he used to like the end pieces.
Huh. It was makbara on there.
I asked him if there's anything kosher shik about it. He said no.
That's interesting. Okay. The other thing that on the list that we went through, something about the crash.
Okay.
You remember that story with the crash?
With the crash with the...
With the door opened up.
Right. Someone was driving him, Shai Director was driving
right.
him to New York, and I think he had to make a short, he had to slow down very fast, and and as the car was turning in the road, like it was a turn on the road, and he had to slow down, and the Rashiva grabbed onto the handle of the car, and by mistake he grabbed onto the thing that opens it,
uh-huh.
and the door opened, and he fell out of the car,
uh-huh.
and he broke his collarbone, and he was pretty banged up, and he was in the hospital for 3 months, and that was the whole. Did I just mention the whole mice with the kidney last time?
Then came that's the next thing on the list.
Right. Okay.
The kidney stone.
Right. So that was that. Now, in the yeshiva...
Well, could you say the mice with the kidney stone?
I didn't say it last time?
I don't have it.
You don't have it?
No, there was an accident with the tape.
Uh-huh. Okay, so what happened was that they took him to the hospital, and they were checking him for broken bones, and then they noticed that there was something in the kidney.
Yeah.
They thought it was a kidney stone, so they tried to break the stone. That was before they didn't have any sonic rays
right.
like they have
uh-huh.
today. So they used to put up a tube over there and try to break it, be a dime.
Uh-huh.
And it was very painful, and they couldn't break it. And finally they decided the only way they have to operate on it.
Uh-huh.
So they took an x-ray to verify that there was a where the problem was, and they took him to the operating room, and in the yeshiva we were saying, tell him the operation was scheduled for a certain time, we were saying tell him that. And what they do is that before they actually operate on a kidney stone, they take an x-ray right before the operation, because it sometimes moves around a little bit, the stone in the kidney, to make sure they know exactly where it is. So they took this x-ray, and there was no stone. There was no stone on the x-ray. So they went, they didn't know what to do. They put him back in his room, and they had a consultation with the doctors. This was in Columbia Presbyterian. It was like one of the biggest hospitals in New York. And they say there must be some problem. So they went, they took another x-ray the next day, and they found it was there. So they scheduled him for operation for the next day. And again, before the operation, they took this x-ray, and it was gone. So they didn't know what was going on. So the Rashiva heard about, he was wondering what the whole tumor is, what's going on. So they told him that the stone is there, it's gone, they didn't know what to do. So he said that they should show the x-rays to this Dr. Tobin, who was a general practitioner in Lakewood.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. What happened?
Yeah, but this may take some time. But this may take some time. Okay.
Yeah.
Huh?
Was the other, were you talking about Dr. Tobin?
Okay. Can I have a second? Okay, fine. Okay. Yes, so the... So Nachmo, so
Dr. Tobin.
Yeah, so he said, this Dr. Tobin should take a look at it. So they were, first they laughed. What is this, what is a general practitioner, a doctor in an old town like Lakewood? Lakewood, maybe had 10,000 people, the whole town. Like, what would he know? And then they got angry. So it's a chutzpah. You know, we're the big top doctors in the United States, and you're telling us to send the x-ray to this thing. Anyway, he insisted. So they sent it to Dr. Tobin. Dr. Tobin said it's a swollen, he thinks it's a swollen nerve. So then they told him what the doctor Tobin said. They started laughing. There's no such thing as a swollen nerve. Never heard of such a thing. No such hefta. Anyway, but they couldn't come up with anything. And in the end they said, maybe Tucker, this is a swollen nerve. And that's what it was. It was a swollen nerve. And... So then he didn't need any surgery, but he went through a lot of tsar trying to break up a stone. There was no stone.
Uh-huh.
And he was 3 months in the hospital, and he had broken his collarbone. And finally, he came back to... He was in Bar Park convalescing for a while, and the family was afraid that he would be bombarded with visitors.
Uh-huh.
So they arranged someone, one of the Baal Batim had an apartment that he rented out. There was no one there right then. So he gave it to the Rashiva to stay. Like, it was a secret place, no one knew where he was.
In Bar Park?
In Bar Park, yeah. So the Zatmar Rav, Rabbi El Tadlbaum, heard that the Rashiva wasn't well. He said he wants to go back to Chayla. So for him, for Shteitzuch, you know, they told him how to get there. He came and he walks in, and he was in Lakachayla. Then he left, and the Rashiva told the Bach who was with him that he should run after the Satmar Rav and tell him that the reason why there's no mezuzah on the door is because he's not there for 30 days yet. Because he was afraid there'd be chashdim that he's not nizin in mezuzah. So the bach ran out and told the rabbi that this is what the Rashiva said. So he said, yeah, he said that the Chaim the Shleimer says that he's supposed to put mezuzah in before 30 days, but the point was there that he was chashed that some rabbi would be chashed. He's a litvak, you know, a litvak, so they're not careful about mitzvahs. So that's why he was chashdim.
Uh-huh.
So that was that story.
And then you have the story with the lung.
With the lung?
Yeah.
There was a mice with a lung, yeah, with a behemoth.
Yeah.
The mice with a lung was that they once shafted a behemoth in Lakewood.
Shimon Rapp was a shaykhet, right?
I'm not sure Shimon Rapp was a shaykhet. But I think he was, but I'm not 100% sure about that. He shafted, and there was an interesting shayla on this lung. There was like a straw growing out from one of the lungs, one of the lobes of the lung, and on top of the straw was another piece of lung. It was about the size of a plum. And so like the question was, is this considered all part of the original lung, or is it like a sircha, something which is attached to it? It was a child, so the child didn't know, because it's a very unusual thing. And I must tell you that now that I'm in kashrus and I've been in slaughterhouses 30 years, in and out of slaughterhouses, I never saw such a thing before. Never such a thing after that.
Is there a thing in
the... It was like a chad medara.
Is there a thing called Yeshak Knotel Dome? Is that the problem?
Yeah, they made of that and whatever. Yeah, so... So they brought the lung to my Rashiva. I remember it was a Friday of Shabbos. And we didn't know that he had any shaykhahs with treifas. You know, Rosh Hashivas don't usually have shaykhahs. But evidently he right away understood the shayla. He cut the piece, the plum, in half. And he had someone blow up the lung. It was Rav Michal Small, who was in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
He was going up the lung, and he felt to see if there's any air coming through. And then he said that there's a sefer, I forgot the name of the sefer, that speaks about this, true sefer, speaks about the shayla. But he remembered the sefer speaks about the shayla, but he didn't remember what the sefer said.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we didn't have the sefer in Lakewood, but there was someone coming from New York to Lakewood for Shabbos, and they asked him if they can find the sefer somewhere and bring it.
Mm-hmm.
In the meantime, the whole Shabbos, he was doing the sugya, the Gemara, the Chulin with the Rambam, with there he would spend time. And by Shor Sudas, he told the Gansu Shekel Torah for two reasons why he holds that this payment is mutter.
Mm-hmm.
Then Motzei Shabbos, the person came with the sefer, and both of these things that he said were written in the sefer, that this is the original mutter. The sefer said it was mutter for the same exact same reason, the same rhyme.
Uh-huh.
That was the mitzvah of this.
You don't remember the sefer?
I don't remember the name of the sefer. I think Eliyahu was one of the names. Something uh-huh. Eliyahu. I'm not 100% sure.
You had the story with the Srach and Sukkot.
Oh, you didn't, that didn't come out either?
No. I lost the whole thing.
Uh-huh. Well, maybe it's Simon HaShemayim that some of these things... I'll tell you the story.
I have a lot of these things happen to me. I'm not such an expert.
The Maisa with the Srach is like this. The Rashiv was very makbid that on the Sukkot there should be a lot of Srach. Why was he makbid there should be a lot of schach? He told us because he says if the sukkah is cold, it's sharp and stiff parts of the sukkah.
Not because of the light and the dark.
It says you see the stars through the schach. Well, there's no way you're going to see any stars. The schach was from three to 4 feet high on top of the sukkah, and there's no way to see any stars. He says seeing stars is ancient. But it should be warm. It's possible also if it's cold. And therefore, he said the Rav Issa Zalman actually had a fireplace in his sukkah with a chimney, because it was in Russia was cold in those days, and he was afraid it was mistaken for another sukkah. He said that's more important than it should not be mistaken. And not only was he makbid that there should be thick schach, he himself used to put the schach on part of the sukkah. Before sukkahs, because to be Isaac in the midst of building a sukkah. Now they used to deliver whole trees, pine trees, whole trees, because since it was going to be very thick anyway, you know, 4 foot high, so then they could put a whole tree on top. But the Rishu couldn't lift up a tree. So he asked, I remember one time I was there, Yaakov Schiff was, Rabbi Yaakov Schiff, he was a bacher, and he asked So the Shiva asked him to cut off some branches so that he can put them on top of the sukkah. So he took an axe, and he picks up the axe, and is about to come down on this tree to chop off a branch. Well, the Shiva says, halt, halt, a minute. He says, stop. So he stops. So the Shiva comes over, takes the axe, and just checks the metal part of the axe that is on tight on the handle. But like it says in the Gemara, that you know that person's chayv of a gullus, because you should have checked the axe.
Right.
So after he checked the axe, he cut it off. The Shiva went up the ladder with a...
Where were these trees?
What?
Where did they find trees?
In Lakeland, there are plenty of...
Oh, but it was someplace else, not in the yeshiva.
Not the yeshiva property. They ordered them. So he put the schach on. So now, so that was one ma'aser. I don't know if that's the ma'aser.
That's not the... You told me that.
Another ma'aser, Rav Yisrael Feigenstock.
Right.
So Rav Yisrael Feigenstock was on top of the sukkah. And since, like, you put a whole trees on, it doesn't lie flat easily. So very often there were like spaces. So in order to make sure that everything was covered well, someone used to go in the sukkah with a stick and stick it up where it was light, you know, to put more schach. Mm-hmm. So Rav Yisrael Feigenstock was on top of the schach, and someone's handing him schach, and he's putting the schach on top of the sukkah, and someone was put a stick up from underneath. Well, the Rashiva came in to the sukkah and he saw that it was light in some places. He took the stick and he said, duh, and duh, and duh. And Rav Yisrael Feigenstock was on top and he couldn't see the Rashiva. He says, someone downstairs was picking up the stick, says, duh, and duh. So he says, yeah, they the Zachman of Woods Lake and the Kena come to Don Huffman. You know, so he was, so he knows that she was down there doing it, but that's exactly what happened. Mm-hmm. Right, so it was just a little bit embarrassing.
Yeah. The other thing was about the Erev's, about Benaz Manam.
Benaz Manam, he was completely different than he was during this man. During this man, he was not the friendly type Rosh Hashiva. He was Mekayim Zorek Mara B'Talmidim, you know, but in a nice life. I mean, somebody called over a bacha and he said, you know, that you need new shoes. Here, take $50, buy yourself new shoes. I mean, he took care of the bacha, but he was not the schmoozy type. Mm-hmm. But Ben Azmanim was completely different. He held he was not a Rosh Hashiva, Ben Azmanim. Ben Azmanim was off duty. And there he used to he used to schmooze more, and it was easier to get out from him things. What he held about things than it was during this month. And someone asked him, the Vilna Gaon put the Chazirim in Chayrim.
Uh-huh.
Well, what happened to the Chayrim? Because the Marish Shiva's son-in-law, Rav Tov Schwartzman, himself was the Lubavitch Chassid. And he himself came from Lubavitch Chassidim. His father's name was Rav Shneur Zalman. Marish Shiva's father's name. So, he came from. So he said, "Well, what happened to the chayrim?"
Mm-hmm.
So there's two things. One is if the chayrim was not as kabul b'roid Yisrael, it's not chal on the next door.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing he said. And then he said that the ikka chayrim was because they didn't learn Torah, and they held you shouldn't learn Torah. Some of them said you become a guy who learned Torah. He said, but Bizman is they learn just as much Torah, if not even more Torah than we do. So therefore, the whole sibah for the chayrim is not is bottle. Mm-hmm. That's what he said. These two things. Mm-hmm. And that's how there was someone over there who was Rabbi Avshu Chassid, and he said, but the chayrim was never against Chabad because Chabad is Chachma Bina Das. So that's from the very inception of Chabad Chassidus, it was Torah.
Yeah.
So the Rashiva said, no, it's not true. As a matter of fact, the Ik Chayrim was against Chabad.
Okay. But he said, but it's
bottle.
Okay, the other thing is about the Erev, you built the Erev to make Shilas.
Yeah, we learned Mesechus Erev, and when we finished Mesechus Erev, we had a lot of Shilas, and we made an Erev, I made an Erev, with every Shilas that I could think of at that time, to see what he would pass them. So we asked him to take a look at it. It was around the Yeshiva campus. So he did look at it, and there was some interesting aura that he had about what he was matter, what he was machmer, whatever. It was very interesting.
Okay. No, any new material yet.
You know, when he went on the bus to New York.
Yeah.
And the bus flew from New York to Lakewood. He didn't go by car. Mm-hmm. Well, the Yeshiva had no car. So he always used to sit behind the driver. Did I mention this?
No.
There was a Lincoln Bus Company.
Mm-hmm.
There was there was Lincoln Bus and there was a public service.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the bus lines. So he was take the Lincoln, and they used to reserve a seat for behind the driver. He held that the seat behind the driver is the safest seat on the bus. He says if the driver sees a crash coming, he automatically would save himself first before he saves everyone else on the bus. And so therefore, if you're behind him, it's the safest seat.
Mm-hmm.
He used to go by bus and by subway to Bar Park, but he never went by himself. A Bacher used to go with him.
Mm-hmm.
So if the Bacher was a Bar Hachi, he used to say to him, Shibbol Torah on Asher Rambam, Miashar Rajba, Asir and Gemaras, to a kind of missile v'lach chobaderech. But if the Bach was not a Bar Hachi or he was very tired, he just used to say Yachd Rabbam Alacha Karabim. That was his Shibbol Torah that he said. That was it. Then he went to sleep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Is there anything you could say like a hadron on the whole experience?
Let me tell you this. He used to always walk around with an umbrella.
Yeah.
Do you know that?
No.
Okay. He always just walk around with an umbrella. So I once asked him why he does that. So he said, I asked him, is the reason why he does it, so if he has to go between two women, it should be a chatzitza between two women. Because that's brought down in the Svara. That it could be a chatzitza. So he says, that's not the reason, and I should not even say such a thing, because who knows, there'll come a time where they'll make a mechitza and a shul with a stick, and they say it's a chatzitza. But he said, this is all more good to open the stick and bezich. It was good to have a stick with him. And in Europe, the people used to keep dogs for protection. They were fierce dogs, and he was worried about them, so he won't. So he said, it's good to open the shtek and bezich. But he always used to walk around with an umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
So many stories and ideas, a lot of things, but just don't always come to mind right away.
Yeah, okay. What I meant is a hadron to say something, if you say something about the whole summary of the experience.
All I can say in summary is that it's a special matana from the Rabban Shalom to be able to be in the vicinity of a gadol, that you can see how he acts under all different types of conditions, what the Derech HaTorah is, not just from a sefer, but see in the actual practice. I'll tell you something else, that he was very makbid not to mail a letter on Erev Shabbos to New York.
In New York?
To New York.
To New York.
New York. So I asked him why he does that. He said because in New York, 40% of the postal workers are Jews. And he's afraid that he's caused them to Mechal Shabbos.
And likely they weren't.
And likely they were all going, right. So and other cities that were left after Eden, but New York, 40% of the postal workers were Eden. So he was on the market not sent to New York on Erev Shabbos, because they arrived there on Shabbos.
Mm-hmm.
So once he told me to mail a letter for him on Erev Rosh Hashanah. So I said, you know, tomorrow's Rosh Hashanah, so why is he doing that? He says, Yidden don't work on Rosh Hashanah. On Yom Teruah, they don't work. So in those days, it was like that. So there was a mute, so that you're not going to worry about.
Mm-hmm.
See, I'm just saying, like, these are sort of like small things,
yeah.
But it's Mishnah Nigel Limud. Chazal say, Shibush Tamid Chachamim, that's Limud. Mishnah Mishnah Tamid Chachamim, you learn a lot of things you would never find in the Sefer.
Okay, fine. Thank you very much for your time.
If you hear any other stories about the Roshiva, maybe I can verify them, or maybe I can.
What happens is the people tell me things.